Good evening and welcome to another episode of the OpenPaddock.net podcast. Tonight is episode number 255, originally for Tuesday, November 11th, 2014. We did start out recording most of this on Tuesday, but due to a combination of technical difficulties, power outages from windstorms, ice storms, other communications issues, well, we just crammed in what we could, and we pretty much have just the rally segment. So for those of you looking for our F1 coverage and IndyCar coverage, we'll be doing that next week. So for tonight, we'll be talking about the GRC event that wrapped up the championship in Las Vegas last week. And then we'll be talking to Chris Duplessis. He calls in. We'll talk about the Seed 9 rally and his first run in the GT86. And we'll finish with a WRC preview of Wales Rally GB, the final round of the World Rally Championship. This is OpenPaddock.net.
Higher performance and faster and more reliable.
We've got some interesting things that have been going on this evening. There's quite the weather
that's
been hitting here in the Pacific Northwest. Not quite as bad as those in the Northeast are getting or in the Midwest, but we've got some of the effects of all that. Storm system is making high winds here, and we're getting freezing temperatures, which isn't very common this early for us over here.
Hey, we have to suffer too. I actually had to put on pants today.
That's terrible, terrible, terrible. Yeah. Well, as a special quick thing, we do, Jace had a power outage, so he's not on right now, but I do have one Chris Duplessis who wants us to give him a call. So give me just a second here, and I'm going to call him up, and he's going to tell us about how things went with his first run in the GT86, driving it in anger down at the Seed 9 rally, which took place this last Saturday. Plus, what kind of enjoyment he had down at SEMA. So, hey, Chris, how are you doing?
I'm well.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I've got John Olsikowski on the call with us, who's more normally our Indian F1 guy, but we're converting him over to following rally, which is always a good
thing. They're trying.
Jace Tuttle, who's one of our strong rally members out here in the Pacific Northwest, he was going to be on the call, but because of the windstorms we're having over here, his power went out. So,
I know.
We were just about to, he was just about to get called, and you were connecting the Skype, and then all of a sudden he texted me, crap, power outage. But anyways, let's talk a little GT86. You know, I got to come and visit with you guys a couple weeks ago as you're getting ready to head down to the Seed 9 rally and down to SEMA there. Did you get a chance to give it a proper shakedown before you left, or was it getting a little too late for you guys?
No, we took it for just a little blast on the tarmac at PSI, and that was about it. So we had like 2 miles on the car, and then we were going to go test the next day, but we had other stuff to do to kind of get ready, and so we ended up not actually driving the car at all on gravel until we got to Nevada. So kind of went there without getting our feet wet at all, but it was good because, I mean, I think testing up in Oregon area wouldn't have really been too handy for how deserty Nevada is. So We actually went out and found a little road beforehand and drove around a little bit. We actually broke a few things, which was good because we didn't end up breaking those on the rally per se. We broke the same part, but a different end. But,
well, you definitely found the weak points then, which is exactly what the purpose of this is, obviously, to get it ready. So you started going down there. You went down, you got to attend some SEMA first. Is that right?
Yeah, I only walked into the floor of the show for, maybe like 3 hours, just because we were getting stuff with the car still sorted out. We ended up, a few of the teething pains we had, because it's got all new rear suspension, so it has actually more travel. And we ended up pulling out a inner drive shaft. It kind of blew to pieces because we had too much travel for it. But Vegas being Vegas, there was a shop open late, and it actually uses Porsche 930 inner CVs. So we were able to get those from an off-road, like Volkswagen shop, which was awesome. And they're actually better. They've got something basically that holds it in now. So if that happens again, it really can't go anywhere. So we got that sorted out. And then the next test, the next day, we broke a rear hub, like where it runs stock WRX hubs, front and rear. And so where the ball joint bolts on, we've kind of eliminated the stock ball joint and basically put a pin to run a hind joint off the control arm. And it has essentially too much leverage now for the stock casting on the upright. So that cracked. And that's actually what we broke on the rally as well, just not on the front. On the rear, we broke it testing, then on the front during the rally. And that was maybe partly my fault. I hit a massive washout flat out in fifth. So
yeah, so that was going to be the next thing I was going to tell you. So, you go down, you're going to do this desert rally, which I'm guessing you don't have a lot of experience in doing, considering that that's one area that Rally America doesn't actually visit, is the desert Southwest.
Yeah, I mean, a gravel road's kind of a gravel road, just depending on the surface. And I've raced without trees before. Trees are kind of the biggest difference, is not having like a sight line or a way to read the road at all. But I've done events that don't have as many trees. I mean, Portugal and even Greece didn't have a whole lot in places. And then I did the rally in Colorado back in the day. And, when Olympus used to run somewhere in Washington that didn't have trees. But that's the biggest thing. And then just the surface at this event was so slippery and it was fairly rough. It was really just one road we ran in and out. And I guess they got a lot of rain this year, so there was lots of washouts. It was sandy in places and a lot of like loose, gravelly, marbly bits in other places. So finding traction was the biggest issue. But other than that, I mean, really, really cool rally. I really enjoyed that road they had.
Yeah, so I was looking at some of the...
Definitely want to do it again.
So I was looking at some of the numbers here, and, you're doing quite well. It looks like your stage times were second overall, just behind David Sterik's there. So for a two-wheel drive car, that's pretty darn commendable. And, I'm guessing that the balance of the car is definitely much improved with the redesign.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with the redesign is they used to have a quick change rear end in it because they thought they'd need to kind of adjust that quickly for different stages or different rallies. But the problem with it was it's such a big setup, so they lost a bunch of ground clearance in the rear. So they ended up really just putting the stock one back in and made a tubular subframe that can, give you some different control arms for more travel. And again, it's got WRX front hubs in the rear and BRZ, essentially BRZ front suspension in the rear as well. So that's kind of all, the suspension's not new, but the subframe was. So definitely had to sort that out. But it had way more grip than I thought it would have. So as far as stage times, it was a lot of uphill loose stuff. And so I was actually very surprised to have a stage time like how we were, just for how slippery it felt. But yeah, it's a fun car. It was good.
So that was the next thing I would say, just the feel of it. I mean, you have all this power available to you in this little car, power to weight ratio is definitely way up there. I'm guessing a lot of the slippery was because it's just hard to get that much power down to the ground, especially in those loose conditions.
I think it would have been slippery for anybody. And honestly, off the line, this thing felt like an old PGT car. It didn't have as much grip really, but it's got, more than enough power to kind of make up for that. So you end up chewing tires to pieces, but it definitely gets up and goes. And then at one point I saw on the speedometer 125. So it's a bit quicker than what I'm used to, where a Fiesta, the top speed, like 98. So we were moving.
Wow. That sounds like it was a hell of a lot of fun.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
How could it not be?
Exactly. Right. I mean, rear wheel drive on gravel, it's always going to be fun.
So, you know, you guys were shaking it down, found another weakness. Unfortunately, it was a DNF. You made it through, I believe it was, four stages. So you said you hit a washout, and I was reading what John had posted about it. And I guess when you came back down, it broke something, but you didn't even notice it right away, other than that steering felt funny or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, we noticed it. We knew something was broken right away as soon as we landed. But we were going to just drive it to the end. So basically it was a dip in the road that, you know, water has washed away at least probably 8 feet long and then probably a foot deep. So it was literally just a hole. And so we jumped into it and then slammed kind of the front side. So the wheels basically hit a wall that was about a foot tall. So the ball joint basically ripped out, the wheel caught to the side against like the body, the fender. And then I held it pinned and we were like fifth gear flat out and, it dragged for a bit and we were going to drive and I could see the finish. And then it just lost power. Something, just everything died. Dash went black, lights off. So I'm not actually sure what happened there. And we haven't actually restarted it yet. So there could be another issue that we found. But I'm sure it's easy. We ended up doing some cheap, like, Japanese or Chinese made, like, HID kit for a little extra added light since it's never done a night rally, and I think something shorted out in the lights and kind of killed everything, because when we came to a stop, the headlight relay was just clicking away and that was the only thing that was getting power, and we unplugged that and the dash lights came back on, but then the battery seemed dead, so who knows. We'll sort that out.
Yeah, darn electrical gremlins.
Yeah.
Well, it's awesome that you got a chance to finally shake it down a bit, drive it in anger, and I guess just after that short little bit, anyways, how's your confidence in taking this to the next event and taking on the top guys?
Yeah, I mean, you know, John from Nameless kind of gave me the go-ahead to drive this thing as hard as I possibly could, and so I've actually never driven a car so hard over stuff this rough. Like Danny Grant co-drove for me, and we got to the end of the first stage, and we were just like, oh my God, like, how are we still alive, not being, like, shaken to death, and how is this car still going? So, if, you know, if I was driving it smart, basically for a championship, we definitely wouldn't have had an issue, but that'll be sorted out, and so now it's game on from now. I mean, I kind of know the limits of what the car will do, and then there'll be even a little bit more once that's sorted out, the knuckle, so. I'm so excited to get back behind it. I'm getting faster. That last stage, I started feeling very, very confident with it. And it's just on me. I mean, the car drives amazing. I just need to kind of trust it. But, yeah, I can't wait for the next one.
Excellent. Good to hear. Well, you just landed back home, I believe, and you got some family time that you got to do. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us about it. And we're really excited to see how this car further develops and want to see you out there next season and kicking some ass, man.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, hopefully I'll be out for a test shortly, so I'll let you know when I'm out there.
I'll try and make sure that I'm out there to come watch, all right?
Good deal. I'll talk to you later.
All right, Chris. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was awesome talking to Chris Duplessis. He always tells it like it is, and the insight on what's going on with that GT86 project apparently has plenty of power, which is great to see. And they just got a few little niggling issues, I guess, to work out, but I think it's going to be a pretty strong platform. They told him to drive it as hard as he could to see what broke, and something broke, but it was an actual predictable failure, as they had multiple failures of that type while they're testing it throughout the weekend. So it's nice to know that, you know, your weakness is kind of one area you need to focus on and not maybe a whole bunch of other areas. So
That's the whole point of a shakedown anyway, isn't it?
It certainly is. Certainly is. And we now have back with us, miraculously, Jace Tuttle. He got his power back, and I didn't even do proper introductions because we just dove right into our quick call with Chris Duplessis. John Olsakovsky is with us tonight, of course.
Good evening.
Yes. How are you guys doing, and what are you drinking?
You know, I'm actually drinking just water, but it's not so much what I'm drinking as what I'm enjoying. I still have this jar of moonshine cherries, and we're coming up with creative uses for them. Last night, my wife put them in chocolate pudding, and yeah, it's not bad.
Drunken chocolate pudding. All right, with
Something like
cherries.
that. See, okay, if these were, if you were to do these like in maybe a really good chocolate mousse, it would probably be very, very good. In just a snack pack,
Yeah,
it's okay.
it's one of the snack packs, sure.
So.
Well, Jace, what about you? How you doing tonight now that your power is back on?
Yeah, doing a little bit better now. It was a pretty exciting hour or so. It actually kind of went by pretty quick. I'm doing just swell. I'm sitting here. I am drinking probably something I, shouldn't be drinking right now. I've got an energy drink going on. I've got to burn the midnight oil tonight, so that's where I'm starting.
Ah, yes, I've had many a night like that. yeah, I totally understand.
Oh,
Well,
yeah.
for me tonight, I started out earlier this evening. I was at a friend's house, and they decided to make me a nice warm hot chocolate with some peppermint schnapps, which is a good way to start the night. It's
Ooh,
cold out up
no
here. I
chocolate.
mean, we're got blowing wind
Yeah,
and
it's
freezing
chilly.
temperatures, so you got to warm up somehow, right?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I made the joke earlier about that I had to put on pants. But it is actually getting quite cold even down here on the Gulf Coast. Down in the 40s, which is, I
You're
mean, let's face
showing.
it, it's cold for down here. I mean, it's
40s is cold
is
for us too. We don't do a whole lot of freezing actually in the Pacific Northwest. We stay pretty temperate. So,
There you go.
anyways, so my drink, I transitioned from the wonderful peppermint schnapps hot cocoa to a one of those spiced cider drinks with rum. So again, nice warm toasty beverage there that makes me slur my speech apparently.
Sounds appealing.
That's okay. We've got a lot to talk about, too.
Yes, we do. I'm gonna be slurring all night long. Well, first thing on the agenda, now that we did talk about Seed 9, so I'm gonna kind of jump into some of that stats that came from that. As I was kind of talking with Chris Duplessis there, you guys probably heard me say that he was doing pretty well there for a while. He was in second place with the first three stages that he did. The speed of the car was obviously right up there, because his really the competitor in the top competitor that was at registered for this race was David Sterricks. And David has taken his normally super production Super WRX and has now gone open class. But interestingly, I found out he's actually running a Subaru 2-liter FA engine, which is the engine actually that's being used in the GT86. So he's not using the 2.5 liter STI engine. So a little bit different and kind of surprising. But
That's
anyway,
interesting.
yeah, it's interesting. We'll see how that engine tunes out and
Got my
what you can
attention.
get power out of it wise and stuff. Yeah. So anyway, David Sterricks had the fastest stage times, but if you look at some of Chris Duplessis, he was about 10, 20 seconds per stage slower than him. Yeah, about 20 seconds for the most part on average, which compared to everybody else, that was quite good. Basically, the Seed 9 rally is like Mount Hood rally. It's five stages. It's the same road. It's 7 miles. You go one direction, there's a turnaround, go back the other direction, go to service, do one direction, go back the other direction, that kind of deal. But they went into the night too, so they had a night stage run as well. Unfortunately, Chris's race ended up ending after the third stage. That's where it was in the fourth stage that he ended up hitting that washout and breaking the front suspension right there. And yep, when the car's wheel is sticking out sideways, it doesn't steer very well. So,
I'm kind of surprised, not to say they didn't try it, but just the fact that they didn't go off and find another, steering knuckle or whatever it was, off another WRX.
Yeah.
I'm sure there were a few lying around.
Yeah, but they just wouldn't have made it to service. They had just finished a service. So I think where they were, yeah, in the stage, it wasn't possible. So
understood.
Yep. When you can get lucky if that happens just before the end of the stage, just before service. But if it's not, yeah, you're kind of hosed. So since it's only a one-day event, you can't do a Rally 2 or anything like that. So anyhow, so there were a lot of DNFs. Ting Wusong DNF'd in his Evo. The Saarinen's DNF'd. Brent Lee DNF'd in his R2 Fiesta. And that's kind of wanting to judge Duplessis against, actually. It's like against the R2s, which are such a well-developed platform. There were 8 DNFs in this event. I mean, for a one-day regional event, that's a lot of DNFs. I mean, there weren't that many entries either. I think there was only, 20 entries? So that's a pretty rough stage that they were on there. So good that those that made it through. It was definitely one of those ones that was about survival. So
8 out of 20, that's if my math is still working correctly, that would be a 40% attrition rate. Yeah?
Oh, it was 22 entries. I apologize. It was 22.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Say 30%, still. Right? Okay. So
still, that's pretty high.
It's pretty high. So it gives you an idea of how rough it was out there. And as you do multiple runs, you start digging up that, pulling out boulders. I remember reading one note from, it was Brent Lee actually, had talked about how, he had actually ran into a coffee table sized rock, I think is what he said. And that ended up damaging his suspension. That's why he DNF'd. So yeah, it definitely rough out there. But David Sterix came out the clear winner. George Plisak in second, and Doug Chemise, Chernys, ended up in third. I don't know who Doug is very well, but I've seen George Plisak. He races in Rally America all the time. Anyways, for those that were able to finish, good job, guys, because that was pretty hellacious out there. So that was seed 9, and then, of course, we had another pretty big event this last week, and it was in the middle of the week, confusing some people. We had last Wednesday was the final of the GRC event, and it wasn't on TV live. They didn't have a time slot for a midweek. Because it was doing this in conjunction with SEMA, they weren't, able to do a weekend, event, which SEMA actually runs during the week. So this was on a Wednesday night, starting at 5 p.m. Pacific. So that was exciting. I just had a little power blip at my place. But as I was saying, over at SEMA, they were trying to coincide the GRC with the SEMA event, which is middle of the week. And so they did live streaming via the RedBull.tv. And in all honesty, this is actually the best program they've had yet. They had longer, it was 2 hours. They had backgrounds on the top 4 drivers that were going to be, going for the championship title in this last race. At least mathematically possible. They did a background on Mitchell DeYoung, who's already the champion of the GRC Lights. They covered the GRC Lights races. They covered more of the semifinals and the those heat races. So you got a lot more racing in. And on top of it, we had Lee Diffie with and now I'm going to lose it. Who was it that was alongside him? Tommy Kendall was alongside him doing the coverage, and I thought that pair did a very good job. I've been a fan, actually, of Lee Diffie for the most part. I think he does pretty good. He seems to know what he knows and knows what he doesn't know and doesn't try and fake it, So he comes off really well, a lot better than some of the other people that I've seen try and do some of the coverage. And it was definitely good stuff. So did you guys get a chance to watch any of the race?
Did I get a chance to watch any of the GRC? No, I did not. Too much going on.
I understand. It's definitely, like I said, it was a midweek thing, a little bit harder for some people to catch.
And I didn't know about it in time to be able to set up my DVR. So.
Well, there was no DVR because this was online. You just go to RedBull.tv. Huh. And there it is. What I liked about the choice of them using RedBull.tv is not only did you have the option of, watching it on your mobile device, you could also watch it through the internet on your computer. Chromecast. You could put that, plug that thing just right into your TV, and you got full HD there. The quality of the picture was great. I had no interruptions. I watched some of it from work and some of it from home.
What were you watching it through specifically?
What's that?
Like what devices were you watching it through? On a PC, on a phone, tablet?
I started out, I kind of did all three. I had watched some of it on the computer at work, and then I went and, as I was driving home, and not that I was watching it, I was listening to it. But, you know, you can look over and just kind of see the screen for a second, you know, a stoplight. And the quality looked good, right? There, but mostly I was just kind of listening to it with my headset to see what was going on. I mostly caught kind of the transition in between some of the heats, which was kind of fine. And when I got home to the house, I threw it up on the Chromecast that we have hooked into our TV. So I really got to try all aspects of it, and it worked pretty flawlessly on all of them. So no complaints. I think that's kind of the way forward. Actually, I was kind of hearing rumors that we might see more of that in the next season. I think they liked what the way it worked out. I don't know what the numbers were. I'd like to hear what those numbers were. But yeah, it's definitely a good thing for them to have that kind of streaming available, which I think every event needs to have that. They've tried doing the streaming with the NBC's Live Extra, and it's clunky. It doesn't work nearly as smooth. You can't just rewind and fast forward easily. It just mostly coincides with a live broadcast, and it's kind of crappy. So
yeah. What about any kind of information other than just, you know, whatever the video feed was with timing, scoring?
No, they didn't have any of that kind of stuff. But I mean, this is such short track racing. I mean, what you see is what's going on. There's no point in really the timing and scoring. It's just the way that GRC runs. One thing I will say though is the track. I've commented again and again that the track means everything, and it does. I was surprised at how big and how good this track was. I originally, last week on our call, I had thought the track was going to be less than half a mile, and it turns out it was actually 0.6 miles. It was very wide, and it was definitely none of the red flag nastiness that you would have into a turn one, because they had that nice sweeping wide turn one. You know, granted, it was still a parking lot, but it was a much enhanced parking lot compared to some of the other parking lots. I mean, the worst one was probably New York, which was so tiny. And then you had the one in D.C., which was not very good either. So it's this whole concept of bringing the racing to the people. I get it. Okay. If you're going to have a track you can do that with, I guess this one's the best you're probably going to get.
Well, if you think about it, it's Vegas. They have some pretty large parking lots, and they have a lot of dirt available to move around. So,
yeah, and it was, of course, more of a sandy dirt. Of course, you're in the desert, so that made it a little bit different. And you know, they had the proper full size jump at this one. The Joker was in a little bit different spot, but it still made a significant difference. And it was actually well thought out, and I thought it was actually one of their best tracks that they've had actually all season. The only track that I personally would think was better was the one up at Dirtfish. I think Dirtfish and this track were the two best tracks of the entire season. It was definitely fun to watch. So, you know, we had four guys statistically capable of winning the championship, and we basically had, it was Ken Block, Johnny Weeman, Scott Speed, and Nelson Piquet Jr. Mathematically, that's the way it was possible. Johnny Weeman had the lead in the points. He had to finish second behind Ken Block at best, or that was his worst case scenario, to still win, because Ken messed up when he was at Dirtfish. He went too wide and hit a barrier. That almost made him, he was almost okay from that, survived that. But when he came back onto the track, he ran into Tanner Faust and messed up his wheel from there, and knocked Tanner out of the competition at that event as well. So anyways, that made his points drop, and you know, Johnny had a second place or a third place there, and you know, just kept creeping up the points. Johnny still hasn't won an event, and he was still first in the points without actually a win. So just some smart, conservative driving, staying out of trouble. Anyways, so they went into the race. Ken Block did everything that he could. He won every single one of his heats. He won the qualifier. You know, had the fastest qualifying time. He had all the points that he could muster to win. Ken Block did everything that he could. You get into the final, and Ken Block's in the front row. Alongside him is actually Scott Speed, and you've got Bucky Lasek was actually up front as well. So I think it was Block, Lasek. Speed might have been either right behind him. Obviously, Speed needs to get everything that he's got to try and win the championship because he was farther down in the points. He had this kind of stacked field there. When they go into that first turn, Speed had a really good acceleration. He was actually competing in the GRC Beetle, and he was actually really fast in that car. He really was quick in it. He had a really good start, but he kind of went for the wide and diving into the sharper part, the second part. I guess it'd be turn two at that point because he had kind of a sweeping first turn. And he collided with Bucky Lasek, who was keeping an inside line. And this is one of those racing incidents. You have two people taking two different lines. They both kind of get to the corner at the same time. Who's at fault? Kind of hard to say. But that was the only red flag of the event. Those two run into each other. People spin, go off into barriers. But they patch both cars and get them back on the line. But because of Scott Speed's aggressive maneuver from being on the outside and diving in at speed into that corner, they end up actually penalizing him and throwing him on the back row.
They didn't like that maneuver?
They didn't like that maneuver. So now you got Bucky Lasek up front, and you got an empty gap where Scott Speed was. They don't, in this case, the first lap never finished, and so they put the cars back on the grid in the same place they'd be other than the penalty. We saw the next restart, Ken Block gets a nice clean right in the front. He starts pulling a little bit of a lead, just kind of hanging out there, takes the Joker on the first lap. Bucky Lasek follows him into that Joker. Scott Speed does an amazing job, just weaves his way up through the front. He's obviously a better starter than most of the other parts of the pack. He ends up actually in third place by the end of the first lap, is already behind Bucky Lasek. They're kind of going around 10 laps. Well, Bucky seems to miss a gear, and Johnny Weeman's in fourth at this point, and Johnny's got to get to second to win this championship. It seemed like Bucky missed a gear somewhere and slows down a little bit, backing up Scott Speed. That ended up giving Johnny this opportunity that, well, I'm catching up to these guys now. If I want to get around them, I'll take the Joker. And they had already Jokered, so he takes the Joker and ends up in second place position and kind of no contest there. He just kind of sits there and he's at the same pace as everybody else and just kind of just waits it out and is able to take the championship. You'd like to have a championship winner win an event, but that's not always going to be the case. You know, you drive smart, you don't have to win, right?
It's consistency. If consistency is going to enable you to be overall better in whatever system you use than somebody who wins and wrecks and wins and wrecks and wins and wrecks, then yeah, you know.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is championships reward that consistency. Whereas, you know, yeah, race win will support definitely that push real hard and sometimes, I don't know about reckless, but, you know, you're going to push a little bit harder. But, yeah, you're right. Championships as a series as a whole, it definitely tends to reward those just with the consistency. So, anyway, so the way it turned out, Ken Block for the win, Johnny Weeman in second. Bucky Lasek was able to hold off Scott Speed for third. Scott Speed ended up in fourth. So what that ended up making is for a championship, you got Johnny Weeman winning out by just a... looks like 5 points ahead of Ken Block, Scott B. Speed in third, and Nelson Piquet Jr. in fourth in the points. So, not quite what we were expecting to happen. I think at that final, I think we were all expecting Ken Block to win, but I think more people were expecting Johnny Weeman either to be up there battling closer with him, or you know, do something. He's made mistakes earlier in the season that he would have won an event, but kind of ended up slotting farther back and then having to work his way back up into a good finishing position. But no mistakes on his part. He actually drove it smart and got the reward for it. I think the coolest thing is at the very end, when Johnny Weeman gets on top of his car, and actually should pronounce his name correctly, it's Yanni Weeman. They've been calling him Johnny on the broadcast because they wanted to Americanize it. And I think it's actually Veeman because he's, Finnish.
Mm-hmm.
And when they go and he's standing on top of his car, excited, and jumping up and down. And then Ken Block comes up with his car and does perfect Gymkhana circles around his car, helping him celebrate that he just won the championship. Just doing That's donuts cool. around and around and around. It was a perfect thing to do. He's such a sportsman. He really is. And when they interviewed him afterwards, he's the first one to come out and congratulate him, gives him a little hug afterwards, and he talks to the cameras and calls him by his proper Finnish name, not using the Americanized stuff that all the announcers were using. So huge props to Ken Block. That was cool.
No doubt.
There's also, of course, the GRC Lights, which the championship was already won by Mitchell DeJong. We knew that from the last event. He's pretty much run away with the entire season. But he actually had some competition this time. Andreas Beckerud, who was here from the European, the FIA World Rallycross Championship, he was getting a demo in these cars, and he was right behind DeJong. Both of them won all of their heats, so there they were, neck and neck at the start. Mitchell did not get a very good start. He actually, when he first got off the line, he was like back in fifth, and he had to just claw his way up, and it was so neat to watch that drive. And if you watch anything, that lights race was so good because you can watch him take that perfect inside line in the loose stuff, consistency. He always had that perfect line where other people would get a little bit wide, slow themselves down, just that incremental little bit, and he just kept gaining on everybody and gaining until with just a few laps left, he knew that it was time to take the Joker, pulls right out in front of Beckerud, takes the win. Just brilliant drive. That's definitely one to watch. The kid is a master, and I'd love to see him in the supercars next year. So again, Mitchell DeJong comes out with a win. Andreas Beckerud in second behind him. Austin Cindric got a great third place. Good job for him. Tyler Benson in fourth, and Alejandro Fernandez in fifth. So Nick Roberts, who was out there for the Rally America driver that got to debut in this series, he realized he just didn't have the speed and the experience that everybody else had. So after he was farther back in the pack, he decided he was just going to have fun for the fans. And so he started going wide and smoking the tires every corner. Why not, right? You're in the back of the pack. Sure. Go for it. So he had a pretty good time with that. That was kind of cool. So yeah, finishing up the GRC race, I liked having it online. I thought the coverage was good. I thought the track was good. The run for the championship was great. Mitchell DeJong obviously doing his expert drive and seeing Ken Block do everything that he could, but it still just wasn't enough. It was really the previous event that lost that race for him. That and kind of, I think, he would have probably won that if it wasn't for, I think, Bucky Lasek's little hiccup there and him getting tied up and battling Scott Speed kind of made it where it gave Yanni Weeman the advantage and ended up doing that final pass and taking care of business. But it was definitely a good event. It was fun to watch. And I hope that we get coverage similar to that going into next season. And they've obviously been improving things with the tracks as the season went on. You know, this is still a young championship. They're still feeling things out and learning. So I have to give them a little bit of benefit of the doubt that every idea they try isn't necessarily going to work. But everything at this track seemed to work. There was a red flag, but that was because of Scott's speed being a little bit of an idiot. But he's going for a championship, and that stuff just happens. In other rally coverage, as we move on here, I caught the last little bit of the European Rally Championship, which also took place this last weekend. They're at the Tour de Corse in Corsica, and that's the Rally of 10,000 Corners, which it's mind-boggling, the turns and twists along the canyon walls and whatnot at that place. It's a beautiful tarmac event, dangerous as hell. It's where famously Henry Toivonen died in the Group B days back in 1985, I think it was, or 86. Tragic. Part of the demise of that Group B era was because of that accident. So it's an ERC round, not part of the WRC anymore. but still an amazing event. One reason I wanted to focus on this, because it's the very end of the championship for them, and kind of look at where things are going, because some of the drivers from this we might expect to see in the WRC. It turns out that Esa Pekka Lappi, the Finnish guy who's just been blindingly fast in that series, did end up coming up the champion, even though he crashed out. He became the champion before he even started, because his teammate, also with the Skoda team, Sepp Weigand. Sepp was apparently doing some testing earlier in the week. He crashed in a test, and the damage was such that the car caught fire, and it burned up so much that there was no salvaging it in time for the race the next week. Whoops. And he was the only one that could contend against Esa Pekka Lappi before the championship. So Skoda wins the manufacturer's side of the championship, though, which is proving that the S2000 cars aren't dead. They can still compete very well. They're a larger displacement, higher torque, but you know, they don't have the all-out, I guess, power that the turbo cars have. You know, the turbos have to, you know, deal with a little bit of lag and all that stuff. So the R5s are really the biggest competition for the S2000s, and the Skodas still aren't completely dead. They still work quite well and have come out strong again this year. Just to kind of sum up the way the championship went. So Lappi wins the Drivers' Champion, with the runner-up being Sepp Weigand. In third place was Craig Breen in the Peugeot Sport 208 T16. They've unfortunately, that R5 that Peugeot's made has had a number of mechanical issues. In this event, Craig Breen was actually doing really well. He wanted to get a win, maybe move another notch up, but unfortunately, he got a puncture, and that's really kind of what did him in, was the puncture. It wasn't so much any mechanical issues with the car. So it's nice to see that the car is finally running strong, because that Peugeot has just been, you know, when it's on song, it's the fastest car out there, but it's had too many mechanicals throughout the season. So hopefully next year it'll be a little bit more robust. So good on them for winning the championship there. They also announced the 2015 schedule for the ERC, which a lot of it's going to be the same schedule as was last year. It's not much of a wait, though. I mean, you've got round one is in Austria on January 4th through the 6th, the Honor Rally. So that's you do not get much of an off-season with rally, do you? Round two is going to be in Latvia. That'll be kind of a gravel-slash-ice-snow event. That'll be February 6th and 8th. Then they move on to Northern Ireland for the Circuit of Ireland, which that's one that, if you go online and look, there's a video of Esa Pekka Lappi going all out on one of the narrow shire roads in Ireland, and holy cow, it's full-on butt-clenching scary how fast he's going on such narrow roads with walls on each side. It's unfathomable. these guys definitely push to the limit.
What rally was that?
Circuit of Ireland.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll have to look that one up. Look up Esa Pekka Lappi, Ireland, and I'm sure it'll come up. It's pretty wicked. Then they go to the Azores, which that's such a beautiful, beautiful location for them to race in. That's the one that's got the crater that they race around, the volcanic crater, which is just, it's just crazy. Usually kind of a wet event as well. That's a gravel round. Ypres, which that's one of those big ditches in Belgium. That's an asphalt round. Then you go back to gravel again for Estonia. Then Czech Rallies Lynn, that's asphalt again. So it's got a really good mix here. Then they go to Cyprus for gravel. They're going to go to Greece for gravel. And then finish out again the Tour de Course. So 10 rounds. The only thing I see missing from here is I think they had another one on one of the islands that they used to go to. There's the Azores, and they used to go to, and I'm missing where it was now. There's another one of those islands off of Africa there and in Europe, and I forget which one it was, but it was a tarmac round, and it doesn't look like they're going there this next year. So anyways, that's their 2015 schedule. Nice to see them continuing going on. So then we move on to WRC news, and here's where sadness kicks in, but it was kind of expected. Mikko Hirvonen announced last week that he is retiring from the WRC. You think it's by choice, Jace?
Yeah, I do. He's, I mean, you know, he's got his, he's saying, you know, a lot of it's because of family. I mean, he's raising a family now. He's getting old for the sport, you know, so to speak. The better part of me really wants to say it is mostly choice, but I could see, you know, a lot of strong influence coming from the manufacturers and the teams really just wanting other talent and leaving him without a ride.
Yeah, you know, the last three seasons have not been good to him. Instead of his, you know, consistency that he's always been so well known for, along with some flashes of brilliance, he actually had mostly inconsistency with flashes of brilliance this time.
Yeah.
Which, it's hard to see. He's always been a very good driver. He went over to Citroën when Ford pulled out of the WRC and, you know, affording a driver with his skill, you know, wasn't going to be in the mix. And I'm guessing that, right. You know, M Sport, yeah, having to be able to shell out the bucks for that. They were still searching for sponsors. So he goes over to Citroën, takes a long time to adapt to the way the Citroën car was developed.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Citroën was developed around Loeb. I mean, the car was entirely developed around Loeb's driving style. And so having to adapt it for Mikko's driving style, or Mikko adapting to Loeb's driving style, you know, or whatever, whichever way you want to do it, you know, the driver has to change or the car has to change. And so he had a tough time over there, still didn't, you know, finish where he wanted to.
It was rough watching his transition into the Citroëns. It took several rallies to even look like what we know Mikko to be.
Yep.
And even then, he wasn't up to, you know, what we're familiar with.
He just wasn't comfortable, you know? He was just, you know, you saw the stage ends. You know, it's like, I don't have the feel. I don't feel like I can go as fast. I feel like the car's moving all over the place. Or I feel like, you know, I've got too much understeer or whatever. Just never really got the feel of it. And yeah, that was really pretty tough to see that happen. So then he comes back to M Sport, not really being Ford anymore, even though they're Ford cars. But that's really his home, and, you know, finishes out there with this season. And he actually did okay. You know, it wasn't all his fault. He had issues with some alternators the first round. And I think it was the third round round in Argentina, I think, had an alternator issue. Even though he wasn't necessarily always on the pace, but he did really prove himself. My favorite, though, was in Argentina. It was like the third round before the end. And it's this long stage that's like, I think it was like 30 kilometers in the mountains. It's socked in with fog. You can't see a darn thing, right? He goes 30 seconds faster than anybody else on that stage in blinding fog.
Yes.
And sopping wet, you know, muddy conditions.
Yeah.
I mean, he made everybody else look like a fool in that respect. I mean, so if you think that Mikko doesn't got it, no, he's still got it. But he's got to get comfortable. When he gets comfortable, he's blindingly fast. But yeah, he said he wants to try some other things. He wants to spend more time with the family. What that probably means is he might do some stuff regionally, you know, stuff closer to home. He might do maybe just kind of help out with some development of something, you know, that kind of stuff.
And see, that's an aspect that I can kind of see him in. And part of me kind of hopes he does kind of like, you know, still work with M Sport or, you know, just some of the developing drivers and stuff. Because the dude's got the talent. I mean, he knows how to drive. He knows what to do. And you can tell he doesn't really want to just walk away from the sport.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, he had quite the statistics though. I mean, 162 starts, he had 15 wins. I mean, that's commendable for anybody, in the top level, cause the level of competition, was runner up to, he was in second place 28 times, had 68 podium finishes, 259 stage wins, at least before Rally GB that takes place this week. He scored 1,192 points. That's where his consistency really was. He was a point scorer for the team. He did help Ford win manufacturers championships. He was the biggest threat to Loeb, and he finished runner up to Loeb three times, and I believe he was. And runner-up, was he runner-up also last year? No.
No,
I guess
not
it must
last
have been
year.
Four times then that he was a runner-up for the championship.
For the yeah.
Wow, and all during that Loeb era. And
I was gonna say he would have had it, but he, I mean, you're competing with Loeb. It's
well, and there's things that just happened. Like he was literally 1 point away from winning it 1 year. I remember in 2011, 2010 or 2011, they both go into Rally GB, and what sucks is Mikko ends up having it going too wide, hits a stick that punctures his radiator, knocking him out, and the car is just leaking and whatnot, and he tries to, you know, patch it up, isn't able to, and on the road section, and he ends up having to retire, and stupid crazy thing, Loeb gets his car run into by a stupid spectator who's confused between the left-hand drive that they do over there. And so they basically go both, you know, to pass each other. They both go to the same side of the road, runs into him, and takes Loeb's car out too. But Loeb was leading in the points. So if Mikko had just stayed on the road and Loeb still had just that issue, Mikko would have won the championship. That sucks.
That hurts.
Not that you want to win that way, but it's just one of those things like, man, if I just kept it straight on the road, things happen, you know? But, you know, I'm going to miss Mikko. I think one thing that I want to say is that Mikko, to me, he was one of those Finns that kind of broke out of the mold of being mostly really quiet and reserved, not very talkative. And here's this guy is super charismatic. And
oh, absolutely.
I mean, the exception there would be Ari Vatanen. Ari, he can talk to anyone. Ari is probably one of the best speakers actually out there, you know, from back in the Group B days. But for the most part, Finns are very quiet and reserved. And now most of the Finns that we're seeing in racing, Jari Mäntylä-Latvala, you know, obviously Mikko, you've got Esa Pekka Lappi, you know, in the ERC. These Finns are actually very much coming out and being more expressive at stage ends and whatnot, not being that super quiet and reserved that they used to be. And I think, Mikko kind of had a part in that. People were drawn to him. He's also quite the comedian. He always liked to play tricks on people and whatnot, you know, in the service park and all that stuff. So he'll be missed. He'll definitely be missed. Hope his future is bright because I'm going to miss him out there.
Yep, me too. He and Petter were pretty much some of my favorite personalities behind the wheel.
Agreed.
And without them, it's just,
it's not going to be the same. So another thing that WRC released as an interesting thing, and you know we've debated and talked about all this crap they want to do with this shootout. WRC TV audience rockets by 35%. So they're saying that there's 35% more TV viewers since 2013. So in just 1 year, they increased by 35%. That's pretty commendable. I mean, I don't know what series can say that they've increased viewers
awesome.
That much. They contribute some of this to this year offering more rounds live. So they're doing that consistent time on Sunday. They're showing that final stage. And they're also doing this Thursday night, the street stage stuff that a lot of events will have an early, you know, they'll do a couple of super specials in the city on like a Thursday night. So, and that'll be televised live as well. So they think that a combination of that, I think a big portion of that also is it's taken a while for the WRC promoter, as they call them, to rebuild the relationships with broadcasters to show WRC content again, all that stuff when they were burned when North One Sport went into administration. And it took a long time to build those contracts back up and get the airtime that they had before. Throw in that they're doing that WRC Plus service. There's now some coverage, although late, that you're seeing on some channels here in the United States again, which used to not be showing any of it. It's definitely good to see those numbers coming up. And if the numbers are coming up that quick, then why do we need a shootout?
Right,
exactly. Well, thankfully, the shootout's been kiboshed, so there you have it. So this week, we have the final. This is it for the season. Wales Rally GB. The cold, wet, sloppy mess that it's going to be. The forecast I saw was for torrential downpours and wind. So It'll be a typical event.
What else is new?
Yeah, exactly. I don't expect them to get any snow or anything like that. I don't think it's going to be that cold there, but it's definitely going to be wet. They'll have some of their classic stages out there. Defi, I'm going to totally screw up the names of these. Garthenyog or whatever it is. Hafren Forest. Hafren, I know that one. A lot of you guys that if you've played some of the games that mimic some of these stages, you know, they actually have some familiarity to the area. It's very much actually like Oregon, I guess, what I would explain some of these stages like, especially outside of Mount Hood area and Hood River. It, you know, fast flowing roads right amongst the trees. A little faster probably at Wales Rally GB than what we have up here. We got some maybe a little bit tighter corners, but it is one of the hallmark events of the season. I like that they close it there, close out the season there. Tough conditions, though. I mean, you've got to manage the car. There's so many times championships have been lost there or won in that respect. The championship's wrapped up for this season, but this is also a chance for those young guys to shine. They make a great spectacle out of this event, especially after their revamp of the championship finished last year. The local organizers have really stepped it up, and the amount of coverage, the amount of people showing up, just clogging the stages, it's great to see. And it looks like it's going to probably be the same this year, even though it's going to be cold and wet. It sounded like they're looking for another
Europeans and rally.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the Welsh, they're used to all that,
right?
All that wet stuff, right? So the question is, who do we think is going to pull out a win out here in the forests of Wales?
Well, I'm going to feel pretty obvious. I would say OGA.
You can go with OGA on that sloppy wet stuff.
Yeah, but you know what? I think actually, like, Hayden Patton would, I kind of see him doing pretty good. Like, really,
you know,
really good.
Yeah, I think not only is this an event Hayden's done a couple times before, so he's got experience here. Gravel is a surface that he's very familiar with. Also, the characteristics of the roads are not unlike what you'd see in New Zealand. So, and weather conditions, you know, being wet and cold, and they do get moments of that down there. So, yeah, I could see him doing well. Elvin Evans,
who's got like this could be his
local knowledge, he's one to watch out for. But my money is actually on Chris Meek. Although, okay. Chris, last year, he did, was it last year or 2 years ago? I guess it was 2 years ago, where he got to drive for Top Gear, and he was in that Bentley that he drove on the stages. That was awesome.
Yeah.
So I guess he doesn't have his recent experience there. Meek doesn't, but Chris Meek has been he's been the closest one to the Volkswagen drivers in speed, and with his local knowledge on top of that, I think he's got the edge. So I'm going to say Chris Meek is the one that's going to probably come out with maybe Latvala behind him. And then I'm going to say Miko's going to give it a push. I think he wants to go out with a bang. I think he's going to end up on the podium. I unfortunately don't think he's going to win it.
Definitely. Yeah, I can see Miko really going for it.
The only other exception to that one would be is Andreas Mikkelsen, who also with the Volkswagen team, he's raced for the British Skoda team back with the ERC. So he knows and he's a former BRC champion, the British Rally champion. So I think he's got a lot of good local knowledge there as well. And he's got pace when he can turn it on. And he's in that damn Volkswagen, which we know has all that torque and power. So I'm going to say Meek, Latvala, Mikkelsen. But here are the ones to really watch out for. You're right. Hayden Patton, Elvin Evans, Henning Solberg's going to be there. He's always fast. And then Ott Tanak. If you remember when Ott was driving down in Mexico, he was in an R5 car, and he was finishing as fast as some of the WRC cars. Unfortunately, he wrecked the car and had some issues. You know, took off a wheel, I believe it was, and had to super rally. But he's likely going to end up in that second seat at M Sport.
I expect it.
Yeah, so I think it'll be Elvin Evans and Ott Tanak in the M Sport team. So I'd bet Ott turns it on here. He's got good experience testing there, and you know, a history of driving for M Sport before a couple years ago. So he knows the car well. He knows the course well. I think he's gonna be definitely up there too. But I'm still gonna stick with my meek Lavella Mickelson.
Not gonna argue with you. Right on.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for our rally coverage. Unfortunately, we had some technical difficulties, some of which were created by my damn work, where I had to disconnect for a bit and take care of some server issues, but that's all resolved now. But that means we lost our John Olsikowski. For now, it's Jason Mike signing off. Have a good night, everybody.
That's all. Mm-hmm.